Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to mintplus.ie. Good as new pre-owned smartphones and iPhones.
This is News Talk.
Welcome to Tech Talk, Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we'll hear why you should consider refurbished rather than new this Christmas. Plus, could ride-sharing services hold the key to our climate versus car conundrum? As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or tweet with hashtag TechTalkNT. But first, if you are on any social media platform at any stage over the last few days, you will have seen posts by friends and strangers alike showcasing their top songs of the year and indeed the decade based upon their Spotify usage. As the 2010s come to a close, it's worth looking back at how our listening habits have changed. And to do so, I'm joined now by Stuart Clark, Deputy Editor of Hot Press. Stuart, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. Does it surprise you that Spotify has made such an impact?
It is incredible. I hated it at first. I was a resister, but bit by bit, I've been seduced. Like anything, it's a bit of a filter. Their playlists are very good. The if you like this, try this kind of options are very good. And a lot of artists who were really anti are now saying, well, it's the long game. Over a period of time, the money accumulates. And of course, you do have like the first generation of artists who don't remember the old days and aren't ruining the lack of record sales and sort of shaking their fist and saying, damn you, technology. But it can also really work for artists. You can identify pockets of fandom. I was talking to Emma Langford from Limerick, and she was saying, gosh, I've suddenly got this following in Germany. I don't know how. She went across and she toured. Trad music loves Spotify, so they can identify places like Japan and Singapore where they didn't necessarily think there was a following for trad. They can identify where the fans are, get on to promoters and say, look, you should book us for your festival. There is a rebellion, and the rebellion is this thing called vinyl. Vinyl sales have overtaken CDs for the first time in 20 years. They're up to about 10% of the industry. It's not going to save the industry, but 10% of a fairly big pie is quite a bit of money. And I had the great pleasure to meet Billie Eilish over the summer. And she was saying with her album, it was an album. And she sat down agonized. Side A, last track before you turn over to side B. Wow. She's a Beatles fan. Favourite Beatles album? The White Album, which is the correct answer. So even a 16-year-old coming into the business who's very modern and marketed in a very modern fashion is thinking about side A and side B rather than just cherry-picking tracks.
It's interesting when you look at Taylor Swift, who over the last, and I know you're talking about this on the Pat Kenny Show on Friday, but if you look back at the last 10 years, Taylor Swift sort of took on the likes of Apple Music and so on in terms of the amount of money the artists get. But she's also someone then that when she brings out her album, as she did with Lover this year, she brings out like seven different versions with different album sleeves, so you can see different snippets of her diary. She seems to have the business side of being an artist and surviving in the digital music age down to a T.
Oh, Taylor Swift can undoubtedly read a spreadsheet. There's no two ways about it. And she did keep her music off Spotify. I mean, she said, you know, she's down to my last billion. But she was doing it for the artists at the bottom of the pile. And even the artists who don't have records, who won't get the investment from record companies unless there's money sloshing around. And I mean, Peter Frampton, the 70s kind of guy, was saying that he got literally sort of $4,000 or $5,000 for about 40 million plays. There are some horror stories because he probably didn't renegotiate his deal. So Spotify, I do feel, has to be paying more to artists. But those 0.006%, you know, can add up. And to be honest, it's kind of like the only game in town. There has been stellar work done by the music rights organisations in Ireland, IMRO, across the board to increase, you know, sort of money for their members. So, you know, people are looking at abuses, not necessarily on Spotify, but on other platforms and saying we deserve a bigger share. It's still a work in progress, and hopefully there will be more coming to the rights holders. But I think after, you know, everyone thinking it's going to kill music stone dead, Spotify's beginning to kind of bed in.
And from the fans' point of view, because that's the artist, and, you know, for someone like Taylor Swift or someone like Beyonce who tried to take a stand on this, as someone who pays the tenner a month for my Spotify, you can't help but get annoyed at them going, ah, come on now, because I want to listen to Shake It Off on my way to work. So get back on this platform. I'm paying for it. Yeah. And you're kind of fighting against the fans to a certain degree, because although the music is back on Spotify now, there was a time when I had Spotify, Apple Music and then Tidal just to make sure that I could get all the artists that I want. Do you think the fans are the sort of the losers here, or is it a case of if you want to stream, you have to pay?
Well, I think a lot of artists have said to me that, you know, 10 quid a month for Spotify is not really enough to sustain a music industry. You know, if you want your artists not to starve and to move out of Dublin because rents are too high and go to Berlin, you got to go to gigs, you got to buy tickets. Thankfully, you know, we saw the other day that the Three Arena is the busiest venue in the world. There's great business being done live. And you know what? Those T-shirts, those wavy hands, those bits of vinyl you buy from the concession booth in Whelan's are sustaining artists. A lot of artists are making more money on a tour from T-shirts and vinyl than they are from record sales. I mean, records are a loss leader. So on one hand, no one wants a whinging artist, but it's tough out there. I know artists who have been in the top 20 in the UK, are top of festival bills, getting about 15 grand a year into their mitts. These are not rich people. Taylor Swift is filthy rich. Ed Sheeran is. But those bands, as I say, playing the middle of the afternoon of the festival and are not denting the top five. For some of them, they really are earning less than the average wage. Far less.
And so what is the answer then? Is it that the music rights and, you know, that they need to sort of shout louder and fight their corner harder? Because we're not going to move away from the streaming. Although vinyl is making a bit of a comeback, it's still the minority. So streaming is still king.
You can't uninvent technology. You know, touring. I feel sorry for artists that don't like touring or are too old or too infirmed. It's very, very difficult. It's very hard for songwriters who just rely on royalties because other people sing their songs. They write at home. It's a bit of column A, column B. I think there's still more that can be done to extract proper reimbursement from the various platforms. Artists do have to be smarter. They've got to think about their merchandise. They've got to think about every single facet, which is a shame because, you know, in a way, you should be creating great art. But nowadays, you've got to be able to, as I say, read a spreadsheet, work out, you know, how to get a good deal on your T-shirts, or find really good people to come in and do it for you that aren't taking too big a slice of that pie because, you know, managers and what have you, 15% there, 20% there, going out of what is not a very big pie is going to leave you pretty hungry.
In terms of the smaller bands, so the bands that are on in the middle of the afternoon or even sort of towards the evening, like I think I've spoken to you before, Everything Everything, who are the sig tune for this show, they are one of my favourite bands. I absolutely love them. Anytime they're in town, I go to see them. And their ticket prices are always around €35, which is very affordable for a gig, and they're an incredible band. And then you would go see somebody else who is like incredibly famous, like Ed Sheeran, for example. And his tickets, I bought two for my sister, and I think they were 90 quid a pop.
The market dictates. And it's funny because people sort of say robbing promoters. I'm sorry, if you think that's too much, it's a robbing artist. No artist of the caliber of Ed Sheeran does not sign off or have a manager signing off on a ticket price. They don't rock into Dublin and go, oh my God, my tickets are €100. This is terrible. I thought it was 50 quid. You know, things that really annoy me are a big artist charging for meet and greets. How rich do you need to be? You're selling out the Three Arena. You're probably taking home £500,000 and you are charging fans, I don't know, 150 quid for a grin and grip. Just to get a photograph. And I really do think, how rich do you need to be? But that's just me.
But again, it's only the big artists who are charging the €100 a ticket that are doing that. You won't get that from sort of the mid-range bands. I say mid-range as in terms of ticket price, not talent.
Yeah.
They're not going to gouge in the same way. So it seems like the same people are winning because they get, you know, the Taylor Swift would get the big stream numbers, so she'd see a decent chunk from the streams. She will get the meet and greet fees. She'll get the, you know, different tiered ticket prices.
Yeah.
Because again, there's like the gold standard sparkly banner type ticket. And then there's the nosebleed seats. That they seem to, and they have all the merchandise. She seems to be winning left, right and centre. And what I worry about are the likes of, you know, Everything Everything or Fools, or those bands that are just one or two tiers below.
I seem to remember there was a priority ticket thing that Taylor did where you had to sign up and spend some money signing up to her website.
That was a deal with Ticketmaster back then.
Yeah. Do you know what? I saw an artist in operation a year or so ago, Courtney Barnett. She sold out Whelan's and she had a concession stand. And afterwards she came out and she must have spent 2 hours posing for photographs, signing stuff. She was selling T-shirts like they're going out of fashion, and probably shifted 400 or 500 pieces of vinyl. It was extraordinary because what she had was tour-only vinyl of outtakes and live stuff. And you know what? The point of sale when people have had a few beers, you know, when you sort of stone cold sober, you mightn't get the bus into Tower Records the next day to spend 20 quid on this limited edition, you know, 500 sort of copy Courtney Barnett live in Dallas. But, you know, yay, great gig. Oh, yeah, here's me 20 quid, Courtney. There was a genuine warmth in the woman, but also she was being a salesperson. And an artist more and more having to do that, that they're going out to the merch stand at the end of the night and signing stuff. And the one thing I will say is that I think fans generally are being treated a bit better and not taken so much for granted. And I must preface this by saying that many of the music industry's problems were caused by themselves. You know, somebody likened it to the oil tanker, you know, taking a day to turn around. You know, the industry in the 80s and 90s got so bloated and was making so much money just by putting out a CD and bang, you know, 18 quid or whatever would come back. But when things became lean, it took them quite a long time to cut their cloth to suit what was going on. I think now the industry is streamlined and it's much leaner and much smarter. So, you know, the industry is very healthy if you factor in live. The record industry, not so. But again, these 360 deals means that, you know, record companies have part of the merchandise, the website and all of that. So it's kind of changed a fair bit. It's got its house in order and it's sort of, you know, fit for purpose again.
But OK, so if, you know, you are a band like Ham Sandwich, a great Irish band, I saw they are doing a whole host of dates as they always do coming into December. For a band who's been around for that long and are as good as they are, you know, if you are a band on that scale, are you surviving and, like, dare I say, thriving in Ireland, or are you doing all right?
I don't know too much about the lads' finances. I don't think they tour a huge amount abroad, so Ireland is probably their sort of main. You know, Ham Sandwich are a really good band who are liked enough to do a couple of sellout Olympias. They can, you know, grace big stages. They are a draw now. So I imagine they would sort of get, you know, a decent whack for turning up in Stradbally for the picnic. I don't know about them particularly, but a lot of Irish bands will do the right kind of corporate gigs. I think music and rock and roll has a retro cool. And I see brands that wouldn't touch rock and roll and young bands a few years ago. They're all into sort of dance music and influencers and all this kind of stuff. You ask, why do you want an influencer? And they said, oh, to influence. They didn't really know why they wanted an influencer. But there is a retro cool, and suddenly brands see a value in people writing original songs. My God, what next? So I've seen that the last couple of years. And that's good to see because the relationships and brands are being more subtle. They don't need to clob you over the head. They're going, look, we'll buy into the band, let the band do their bandly thing. We'll attach our name, but it doesn't have to be a neon going,
Yeah.
So I think some of the sponsorship deals and brand hookups are a lot smarter now.
And when Whelan's is a venue that always pops into my brain when I think about live music in Ireland. And that's where you find some great bands over the years. What's our venue scene like? Because I know that venues in the UK are closing and have been closing left, right and centre because they're just not getting people through the doors.
It's hard, but there is a really, really good circuit here. And to give you an idea, Fontaines DC, the hottest ticket in the country, were booked in to play Mike the Pies and Liz Stahl, which is barely 100 people. And they're honouring that. And they basically said the day we stop playing venues like Mike the Pies is the day the band just, you know, stops, because this is what we're about. Going to people, not them coming to us in Dublin all the time and playing. So you've got Mike the Pies, for instance. You know, Dolan's Warehouse in Limerick is turning 25. Happy birthday. They're bringing in people like The National to play, you know, sort of gigs in the Docklands. You can put together an Irish tour, a paying tour. You might earn a fortune every night of about 13 or 14 venues. And it's interesting, you know, foreign bands come in and they say, you don't realise how good your promoters are. Pod Concerts, MCD, Aitken, these are three world-quality promoters. And the venues, they treat us really, really well. I mean, but bands, when they go to Mike the Pies or they go to Dolan's, come back, UK bands saying, geez, the welcome we got, the respect we were shown, this is fantastic. And there's the Spirit Store in Dundalk. There's the Grand Social. Whelan's, we all know, is fantastic. I mean, Cypress Avenue in Cork. Everywhere you go, there are fantastic venues and really nice people working in them. So I'm not just flag waving when I say that the live circuit here is in really rude health.
And we have a lot of festivals. And what struck me, because you and I were talking about this, every time you come into Packenny, I bombard you about it. But there are a lot of festivals that are established. So we have the likes of Longitude and EP and Forbidden Fruit. But there seems to be a lot of the smaller, more boutique ones as well. Does that help with our reputation internationally when it comes to, you know, the music scene across Europe, perhaps?
I think it does. I mean, they always reckon it takes 5 years to establish a new festival. It's a very easy way to make money and a very easy way to lose your shirt. But I think having niche festivals, and there's always some gap in the market. Like this year, there's going to be a lot. Next year, there's going to be a load of retro festivals. That seems to be the future. Retro, 80s artists. It's quite a sort of a safe bet, I suppose.
Do they work though? Because you don't want to see someone that you loved and then they're absolutely shite, and then you feel ancient.
Well, that can happen. And there's also that thing that you run out of 80s bands. Like there's a novelty factor in going, I haven't seen Kim Wilde for 20 or 30 years, but would you go back to see her again?
Yeah.
I'm not too sure. But for a lot of artists, what I think is important is, like editors, for instance, you know, would be, you know, mid-afternoon perhaps at Electric Picnic, but they could headline Independence. And some bands like the day being about them and playing a full set. So, you know, they can pick and choose. Sometimes the bands will come in and play lower down a bigger festival, or make it more about themselves and do a smaller one. And also there is this thing, why should fans always have to travel, you know, to Dublin? I think it's brilliant that we have regional festivals. Independence is one in particular, I think, is just sort of fantastic and has really sort of cemented its kind of reputation in Cork. But all over the country.
All Together Now is in, where is that now? Is that in Waterford?
That's close to Waterford. Had some teething troubles year two with increasing
the traffic,
capacity.
Yeah.
I think a new traffic plan is in order. But once you are there, just fantastic. And it's a great testament to the late, very great John Reynolds that All Together Now, you know, the first year in particular was just wonderful. And I talked to you about sort of brands. You know, John allowed the big boys in to have the pouring rights, the beer companies, but also insisted that the smaller craft breweries could be there to the side. And he made the branding subtle. Again, no neon signs. He was happy to have the big brands there, but he just kept it sort of toned down. And, you know, John Reynolds was one of these sort of maverick people that tried things. When often you'd sort of say, financially, that's a really bad idea. He'd give it a whirl. Sometimes it would work. Other times it would fail. But John would dust himself down and keep on going. When you see what, you know, Aiken have done, say, with Cork Live at the Marquee.
Mm-hmm.
MCD are always looking for something new. They've got Sunstroke next year. So we've got new stuff, old stuff. As I say, it's a very exciting sort of live scene we have here, both club venues and the big festivals.
And so from finally, in terms of, you know, in the interest of sustaining the music industry, if someone is a music fan and, you know, from a financial point of view, all they can do is use the free version of Spotify, perhaps.
Yeah.
What can we do to make sure that we keep, firstly, our reputation as being a class place for live music, but also then support our artists, whether they are the Taylor Swifts or the smaller bands?
I would say if you can afford, do subscribe to Spotify rather than take the free version with the horrible adverts. If you can buy the vinyl or the CD or the cassette, there's a few cassettes now back in, I don't know if it's going to be back in fashion.
I saw Maroon 5 did that a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I just went, ah, lads.
Jack White, I think, is the big flag waver for cassettes. Please get to shows, get a T-shirt, you know. Emma Langford has these wonderful dog-sized T-shirts now for your hound. Things like that. Smart merchandise, you know, which makes people smile, is going to, like, you know, perhaps make them put their hand in their pocket. But if you can get to gigs, you know, that money is going pretty much directly to the artist with no middleman.
Okay. And you're optimistic then that it's all going to be okay?
Well, do you know, we did a big thing the other day at Hot Press, with multi-generational around-the-table talk, and Louis Walsh was there. And Louis has been around the block quite a few times. And he said, look, whatever about record sales, he said, the amount of music at the moment, the diversity of music from this island is staggering. And he reckons it's healthier in terms of creativity than it's ever been. And I have to say, I agree with him.
Okay, that's a nice note. Stuart Clark of Hot Press, thank you so much.
Cheers.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
You're very welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. You may remember our Commuter Health series here on News Talk, which took place back in November. Many of you got in touch with your stories outlining very long work commutes and just how much of your lives you spend in traffic. As with many of these big problems, the question of where technology slots in terms of fixing this issue arose. While Consumer Hell was taking place, I was lucky enough to be at Web Summit in Lisbon, chatting to one of the many companies looking to be part of the solution.
Mark Thomas, I'm the Vice President of Marketing and Alliances at RideCell. RideCell is a company that makes a cloud platform for car sharing and ride hailing. When companies want to get into the business of creating their own fleets and putting them in for people to use for car sharing or set up a ride hailing thing, they'll come to us for all the technology.
Okay, so this is, I imagine, the likes of, you know, Uber, MyTaxi, Lyft. They're a lot of the companies that we would have heard of. But your brand is more in the background rather than the forefront. Is that correct?
That's right. Also, Uber and Lyft are ride hailing. We can also do car sharing, things like Zipcar, Car2Go, DriveNow. Those are also the kinds of businesses that companies are looking to get into.
So I've used a lot of these services as a consumer, but I've never thought about what goes on in the background. So what are the different cogs that you guys are turning in the behind the scenes?
Absolutely. To create a car that's shared, you need to have more than a car that's being run just for families. For instance, when you're sharing a car, there's nowhere to get keys from. So having the ability to unlock the car when you walk up to it is really important. It uses the internet so that it connects the car so we know where the car is and has the ability for people to reserve the car ahead of time or just walk up to one like you would some of these new scooters that are on the street, press the button, get in and drive the car.
And so a few things spring to mind straight away. You know, I was in Seattle 2 weeks ago and I saw a lot of people using this type of technology for the scooters, as you mentioned. But security springs to mind, both from the car or the vehicle's point of view, but also my point of view, my personal privacy, my personal security. I'm sure that's of paramount concern when you guys are designing all the different bits and pieces that you do.
Security is really important on both sides of the equation. Companies that have $50,000 cars want to be sure that the people who were unlocking them, getting into them, and driving them have a valid driver's license, and they're not going to use it for some criminal purposes. So when you agree to join these kinds of services, that becomes something which will do not just a credit check to make sure you can pay for the car, but a driving check to make sure that you're authorized to drive it.
And then from the customer's point of view, you know, are there concerns or could there be concerns around, you know, tracking of where they go, how long they spend in different locations? Is all that information encrypted and protected so that you can't see it's Jess Kelly has driven to Lisbon, it's the person with this account number has gone here, there and everywhere?
Absolutely. So the goal certainly to be compliant with these GDPR requirements.
We love GDPR, yes.
Make sure that we have to know and be able to bill you how many minutes you were in the car, how many miles you drove it. So knowing where you picked it up, when you picked it up, and where you left it is an important part of the service. So people understand that that information is going to be kept, but it's not going to be identifiable to them. As you mentioned, their customer number 4218 and not this person at this address. So it's very important to separate identity from usage.
So all this week on News Talk, we've been talking about commuter hell, and we've been looking at the different problems that exist, but also some of the solutions. And as someone who doesn't drive, I'm very reliant on public transport, but also ride sharing and ride hailing as well. So where do you see your solution slotting into, you know, initiatives like commuter hell to try and ease some of that pressure and that strain that we're all facing on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Well, there's a short-term answer to that and a longer-term answer to that. I think in the short term, one of the things that's become increasingly popular in my native town of San Francisco is using ride-hailing, like Uber or Lyft, which are both active there, as a commuting mechanism. And because of how they price it, if you want to take the car by yourself, that's, let's say, $20 to get to work. If you are willing to share the car with three other people, the ride goes down to $5 or $6. So there's a huge incentive to pack people into these cars. And they're making it now so that you can rent the car or get in, take a ride, and it'll tell you if you just walk across the street, the car's coming from that direction, it'll be faster for everyone if you can get in, so it doesn't have to turn around, make a U-turn, and then make another U-turn to keep going. So there's lots of sophistication in these ride-hailing platforms that solves one of the biggest problems that we have with traffic, is that when you look around, 85% of the cars have one person in them. And if we could just condense and put four people into every car, imagine how much of an improvement it would be from a traffic perspective.
We have a big push in Ireland, and I'm pretty sure everyone does at the moment as well, towards electric vehicles. We have targets that we're hoping to reach in terms of proportion of EVs on the roads by a certain year. Do you think that, again, these types of initiatives can be looped in to encourage the presence of EVs on the roads in places like Dublin? Because Dublin is different to San Francisco. You know, obviously we're much smaller, but the problems are quite similar, I'd imagine.
Yes. So once people are getting comfortable with the idea of using a shared vehicle, that's the way to unlock EVs in a city. If you think about buying a shared vehicle as a private individual, if you think about buying an electric vehicle as a private individual, it means you have to have a charging station. If you only have street parking, it's not really that practical to run a cord down, you know, a block and a half to where you found a parking spot. And if you live in an apartment complex, which has a big garage, you're beholden to the apartment complex owner to put in charging stations. It's not something you can do yourself. So, and you know, then having to charge at the grocery store or at work all become just an additional headache that makes it less attractive to own an electric vehicle. If these electric vehicles are owned by a shared vehicle operator, and these vehicles now typically can go 250 miles or so, that means the fleet operator is the one that's responsible for keeping them charged. And at 250 miles, they'll only need to be charged once every 3 days, which is about the frequency you want the cars to be washed and cleaned out anyhow. So they would take the cars to a depot somewhere where there's a nice bank of charging stations. Maybe that's a place where they set it up where the power grid had some excess capacity, because it does take a lot of power to charge these vehicles. And it's then becoming a way for people to get around the city using an environmentally correct vehicle. These vehicles can be rented by the Uber drivers themselves, and that they're then driving around using an electric vehicle. So having a fleet owner take responsibility for putting electric vehicles in a city is one of the great ways to speed up the adoption of EVs.
When you think about what we've just heard there now, so, you know, electric vehicles, good for the environment. The ease of use of payment for this is good for us, the consumer, because you're not having to faff around with cash or go to an ATM or anything like that. You can just do it all with ease without thinking about it. Do you think we're going to see a trend of a decrease in car ownership and, you know, our own vehicle ownership as we move towards these different shared platforms, for environmental reasons, for convenience reasons, for financial reasons, because it's very expensive, again, talking about Dublin, Cork and Galway, to own a car in those cities?
I think we're at an inflection point where private vehicle ownership is going to start turning down. And then there's a couple reasons for that. When it becomes cheaper to use shared mobility than use your own car, there's going to be a certain group of people who are just saying, yes, this is great. It's certainly more convenient to get ride hailing to come pick you up at your door and drop you off at the door. You don't have to worry about parking, and you don't have to worry about all the things that are involved in owning a private vehicle, washing it, registering it, insuring it, parking it, repairing it, getting it licensed. So there's a lot of overhead that goes into the quote-unquote freedom of having a car to use at your own disposal. If you look at an example in the industry, there aren't many people that feel the need to own CDs anymore. I have a box of them in my garage. I don't use them because it's much cheaper for me to use Apple Music or Spotify and listen to whatever I want, and it's a one low fixed price. If transportation becomes that way, the same thing you'll start to think about. Wait, it's more expensive to use my own car, and it's less convenient. I don't need to own the asset anymore. I can just subscribe to these services, or I can pay for car sharing and ride hailing. And the reason that hasn't happened yet is that Uber and ride hailing services are still more expensive than using your own car. In most cities, except places like New York or maybe San Francisco, where it's so expensive to park your car that it, even those expensive fares make it work. Once you get autonomous driving and the driver is replaced, that's 75% of the cost of operating a ride-hailing service. And so in that instance, then the cost goes from being twice as expensive to using your own car to half as expensive to using your car. That's why everything depends upon the ability for autonomous vehicles to successfully be developed, because it will change everything. Without sharing, autonomous vehicles are a really expensive form of cruise control. But and it's a kind of thing that most people wouldn't be able to afford. But once it becomes shared, then you can have access to these, you know, safer vehicles that are less expensive, and it will change how we get around forever.
That was Mark Thomas of RideCell. Quick one, I just wanted to let you know that Liz Murphy was the winner of last week's competition. Congratulations to you, Liz. You win a Samsung Galaxy S10 with thanks to Virgin Media. You can get a full rundown of their offers and deals on virginmedia.ie. Coming up next, refurbished versus new.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com. Earlier this year, I went out to Sandyford here in Dublin to meet with a company called Phonua. This is a company that fixes the phones for the likes of Vodafone, Carphone Warehouse, pretty much any outlet selling devices here in Ireland. And they were launching a brand new brand called mintplus.ie. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because you probably just heard it on the little jingle before I started talking there. They are sponsors of this program. And over the last number of months, the brand has just gone from strength to strength. And I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan Eyre, who's the sales and marketing director at mintplus.ie. Alan, you're very welcome back. When we spoke last, it was out in your offices and you were just sort of barely launched mintplus.ie. For those who don't know, remind us what it is that mintplus.ie offer.
Well, mintplus.ie was something that we set up to try and help consumers navigate through the pre-owned phone market. So there's lots of different people out there supplying different types and different conditions of phones, and we've been in the industry for over 20 years working with some of the biggest brands and biggest partners, and we thought to ourselves that we could probably make it a much better offering and actually put some service and value behind the offering. So we came up with the brand Mint Plus, which we'd like to call a premium offering around pre-owned. And the idea about mintplus.ie was really to be able to sell premium pre-owned devices with peace of mind to the consumer, that there was a whole quality and warranty behind that. And on top of that, a local service offering that would support it in there.
Because the types of phones, and for those who don't know, like I know Tom Dunn has been on and bought one for his daughter and absolutely raves about it. So he bought, I think, an iPhone 6. Explain what the difference is between buying from somewhere like mintplus.ie versus the shop on the corner down the town that you might know.
Well, again, Mint Plus is only a new thing, but the Phonua Group is behind Mint Plus, and that's been in the industry, in our mobile phone specialist industry, for over 20 years. And we work with some of the biggest partners, so people like Vodafone, Carphone Warehouse, Tesco Mobile. And we have behind us as well our Phone Fix Repair Centre, which is today is Ireland's only fully manufacturer accredited repair center. So we've got 60 technicians working with three Vodafone to repair all of their phones coming back from consumers. And it's those same technicians that are actually looking at pre-owned phones, refurbishing them, putting them through the quality checks and making sure that they are fit to sell on at a quality standard that we are happy with. So that's a huge differentiator. And on top of that, we're warranting everything we put out on the market. And finally, we are making sure that everything that goes out is presented in a good way so that you can take a Mint Plus product. It's got all the accessories in the box. There's a presentation box, and it's something that you can quite comfortably gift to friends and family, particularly over this period. And we've got a full backup. We've got a full customer care service that you can actually speak to somebody, ring somebody if you have any problems whatsoever. And on top of that, we've got a huge logistics centre which is specialised in making sure that product gets to you when you need it. So, mm-hmm. So Mint Plus is part of a much bigger
operation. Yes. Yeah. And so how has it gone? Because I think it's only 7 or 8 months old. And as you said, so Phone New It has been around and is very well established. But launching a new brand that's selling phones, when you do have the big retailers, you have the likes of Carphone Warehouse, you have all of these other outlets. How has it gone, you know, positioning yourselves as the place to go for a refurbished phone?
Well, for us, it's gone very well. Obviously, as you say, it's very new in terms of mintplus.ie. It's very new for our business to be doing something direct to a consumer as well. So we're at our own learning curve there. But I suppose the two biggest markers for us in terms of understanding that people are starting to hear about our offering and people are starting to like our offering is the fact that more and more now, a higher percentage of our hits on our website are coming through direct traffic. That's people looking for Mint Plus, which means obviously the brand's getting out there. People over the last 3 or 4 months have probably heard more about Mint Plus than they ever have because we've pushed our social media campaigns. We've done a lot of things on radio.
You sponsored this program.
We sponsored this program, exactly. So, you know, we felt it was time to kind of just start pushing that out because we felt everything in the background was ready to go that we could really push out. And the sort of biggest thing that tells us we're on the right track is that last month we had 40,000 visits to the website.
Wow.
Which was, for us, was huge. And on top of that, the feedback that's coming back from consumers that have purchased product on Mint Plus, not just about the quality of the product they're getting, but the support and the service that goes with it has been really, really good. So that kind of tells us that what we set out to do, which was to put a premium brand around this pre-owned market, that is difficult for consumers to understand, is actually working.
Have there been any learnings along the way? Have there been any speed bumps that you didn't anticipate, particularly seeing as it's Phone New's first venture into sort of the consumer-facing market? Was there anything that you didn't anticipate?
Well, what we didn't anticipate certainly is how difficult it is to get a brand out and get awareness from consumers and how much you have to focus and dedicate to putting that brand. And equally probably how much we have to make sure that we are moving our website through and we are expanding what we're doing and what we're offering.
Mm-hmm.
For example, early next year, we'll be looking at flexi payment. So that's one of the things.
Very good, yeah.
Because even if you're picking up a mobile phone for 250, 300 euros, people still may want to put that on a flexi tap payment. So those are the things that will be coming next year. We're also looking at offering the possibility for you to trade in your old device at the same time you're taking a new device.
Brilliant.
So keeping that recycling message going and again, reducing the price that you're paying at the till, essentially.
Yeah. So you mentioned there a few minutes ago that we're facing into the festive season now and, you know, people may be wanting a new device without the premium price. They may be considering buying one for their partner or family member. Maybe Santa's going to bring some of these ones as well, because yes. I know that he has access to your store and your offering as well. So give us an idea of sort of the prices that people can avail of and sort of the deals that everyone from, you know, your sibling, your parent, Santa can avail of.
Well, it is all about value for money. That's what the Mint offering is. We want to have quality for the right price and value behind it. So the biggest differentiator really in the terms of pricing is that if we took today an iPhone 7, 732 gig phone, which we all know as new phones have come through, there's been less and less technology leaps in those phones. Mm-hmm. So an iPhone 7, 32 gig is not much different in terms of the spec. It's a high spec phone, but it's not too much different than the XR, for example.
Yeah.
So in terms of that money, and the iPhone 7 today is 449 as a new product, but you can get it on mintplus.ie. for 243, so you're saving over 200 euros for a phone, and that's considerable saving. But on the back of that, I'll reinforce again, you're getting the comfort that it's warranted, it's got a quality assurance against it is as good as new in condition. We're also offering currently the iPhone 8 64 gig. That's at $399 at the moment with a free Bluetooth or Huawei speaker.
Oh, cool.
So that's a good deal. And there'll be constant deals going on throughout December. So we're doing a 12 days of December. So I can't give too much away here. But
okay.
If people come back on the site, there'll be different things going on to the site for those 12 days, different offers. And it could be anything from phone offers to accessories and wearables and all those types of things.
Yeah, because I was on the website the other day because I am due an upgrade myself. So I've ordered an iPhone 11 and I was on your website looking for everything from phone covers to headphones and all the rest. And everything is there. So you can kind of do the one-stop shop.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to the fact that we're a large company that deals with all the major brands. So recently we've been able to push those products onto the website and expand that offering. So anything from speakers, headphones, wearables, fitness trackers, tablets that you can get on the site. And obviously, just to reinforce, they're all brand new. They're not pre-owned, they're all brand new, but they're all from big brands, Fitbit, Otterbox, Apple, Samsung, Huawei. And it's getting a lot of traction. And obviously, the one thing that everybody seems to want for Christmas is the contact wireless earbuds, AirPods,
yes,
whatever they are. So we've got a massive range of those, starting from as little as 25 euros. So there's something on there for everybody. And as I said, there's going to be constant offers going on because we want to be competitive on the site. We want to be able to allow you to come onto the site, get a real good deal on the phone, but also take away accessories and other things that you might need.
Brilliant stuff. Well, not only is it good for your pocket, but also it's good for the environment as well. So rather than just leaving a phone in a drawer or chucking it out, it's repurposing a device and passing it on to whomever.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that we don't really touch on much, is the fact that these phones are getting a new life. They're getting recycled. They're not going into landfill. They're not going into the bin. They're not sticking.
So you can feel good about it.
Yeah. So there is a really positive environmental message on top of that. Yeah.
Well, there you are. So the website again is mintplus.ie. For the moment, and as always, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app, in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Farty's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.